WMRA News, I'm Bob Levikin. Harrisonburg residents debate whether police officers should be removed from the city's schools. A D.C.-based restaurant chain will invest in a new facility in Augusta County, creating dozens of new jobs. And we review the week in Virginia politics. This is the WMRA Daily for Friday, September 10th. Presenters at a public meeting Thursday night in Harrisonburg expressed opposition to keeping police officers in the city's public schools. WMRA's Randy B. Hagee reports.
About 40 people sat scattered across the auditorium at Skyline Middle School in Harrisonburg, where the SRO, or School Resource Officer, Task Force, hosted a town hall on potential alternatives to the SRO program. The task force, which includes school staff, parents, students, and community members, was created in January to evaluate whether or not the division should keep police officers in the schools, and if so, what their roles should be. In June, they hosted a town hall with a presentation from the Harrisonburg Police Department about the SRO's jobs and how the department has begun to implement restorative justice into their work. Thursday's presenters argued against the necessity or efficacy of police in schools.
Well, I understand that SROs, specific SROs, can be beloved at the school, and for good reason. So we understand that there might be an emotional response.
Teresa Hepler is an attorney with the Legal Aid Justice Center in Charlottesville, where she's a part of the Civil Rights and Racial Justice Program.
What we're here to talk about today are facts and data about the systemic problems with SROs being in schools.
Hepler argued that schools with SROs discipline their students more often and more severely, which included referring students to law enforcement. She also presented data from the U.S. Department of Education's Office for Civil Rights, which showed that within Harrisonburg City Public Schools, Black students only make up 9.7% of the school population, but 14.5% of students referred to law enforcement.
This is very much a holistic issue. So it's not just about SROs, it's about the entire disciplinary culture of a school. SROs have a good, decent-sized impact on that, but they're not the whole picture.
The final half hour or so of the event was reserved for questions from the audience. A few in attendance took issue with the format of the event, which they had expected to be more discussion-based than presentation-based. Others disagreed with the entire premise that law enforcement was not a benefit to the schools.
You're here to dismantle the criminal legal justice system. There's a very large part of this community that does not agree with that.
There also appeared to be some confusion over what presenters and the police were referring to when they talked about school discipline.
My name is Jason Kiet. I'm a captain with the Harrisonburg Police Department. I appreciate everybody being here. Appreciate the panel. You made some good points, and I genuinely appreciate your time. Just wanted to address the question regarding discipline, and the answer to that question is no. School resource officers are not involved in school discipline.
To be clear, school resource officers in Harrisonburg are not involved in enforcing any school rules or policy. Where their jobs intersect with school discipline, though, is when school administrators refer students to law enforcement to deal with. In some instances, such as with drug offenses or assaults that result in an injury, administrators are required under Virginia law to report to law enforcement. Some parents in the audience expressed fears over who would protect their children from drugs or violence if the SROs were removed. Others, like Raquel Williams, are more concerned with the officers' behavior.
There is a fear with melanated people of color of the officers because of what they have witnessed, what I have personally witnessed myself, as well as witnessed from afar. Having four children in front of my house that they sat every evening and talking about what they were going to do when they got to college together, and having officers jump out, pull guns on them, and pull them out of the car. Thankfully, Officer Kidd, you did show up and you apologized for the incident. But my daughter, who is 23 now, is forever traumatized.
The next step for the task force is to organize parent and student focus groups to gather their input. For WMRA News, I'm Randy B. Hagee.
With hospitalizations for new COVID-19 infections sharply rising, the Virginia Hospital and Healthcare Association urges unvaccinated Virginians to get a COVID-19 shot to protect themselves and others. Data from the Virginia Department of Health show that as of Thursday, hospitals in the Commonwealth are now treating nearly 2,200 patients who have been admitted for COVID-19. That's up from 195 in early July, 10 times the number hospitalized in early July. Information about COVID-19 vaccination appointments and locations can be found at vdh.virginia.gov. www.harrisonburg.gov. Washington, D.C.-based restaurant chain will invest more than $30 million in Augusta County for a new processing and packaging operation. Governor Ralph Northam announced Thursday that Cava, a fast casual Mediterranean chain, will construct a 57,000-square-foot facility in Mill Place Commerce Park and create 52 new jobs. The Virginia Economic Development Partnership worked with Augusta County and the Shenandoah Valley Partnership to secure the project. And Governor Northam also approved $500,000 in grants from the Commonwealth's Opportunity Fund and the Virginia Investment Performance Grant. Virginia's Redistricting Commission has filled another vacancy. The Richmond Times-Dispatch reports that Republican Senator Bill Stanley will replace Senator Steve Newman, who withdrew abruptly last week. Stanley represents the 20th Senate District, which covers parts of Southside and southwestern Virginia. The commission currently has just over a month to complete new maps for Virginia's congressional and legislative seats. The process has already been delayed by an unidentified member of the commission testing positive for COVID-19 late last month. Excavation crews in Richmond worked through the day Thursday searching for a 134-year-old time capsule believed to be under the pedestal that until Wednesday held a statue of Confederate General Robert E. Lee. From Partner Station VPM, Patrick Larson reports.
An advisor for the Lee statue's removal, the best evidence of the capsule's presence was a scan showing a space in the stone where it would fit. But as the Richmond Times-Dispatch reports, there's no proof that it's there. The state has had no luck so far in finding the old capsule, but did dedicate and place a new one in one of the pedestal's cornerstones. Among the items in the new capsule are a collection of Pulitzer Prize-winning columns about last summer's racial justice protests in Richmond, written by the Times-Dispatch's first black columnist, Michael Paul Williams. The road surrounding the area will remain closed until Saturday. It's unclear when work will finish.
Patrick Larson reporting. Virginia is one of the wealthiest states in America, but when it comes to spending money on education, the Commonwealth spends less on each student than most other states. Virginia Public Radio's Michael Pope reports.
Virginia has one of the highest median household incomes in the country, ranking in the top 10 according to census data. But it also spends so little per pupil in its public schools that it ranks in the bottom 10. Chad Stewart at the Commonwealth Institute says that has real-world consequences for students across Virginia.
Low funding especially impacts schools with a high share of students living in poverty. Increasing funding can have long-lasting positive impacts on both academic gains and graduation rates.
Rachel Dean at the Legal Aid Justice Center says Virginia's current per-pupil spending, which is about $5,000, is nowhere near enough.
The Fund Our Schools Coalition recommends that we increase state per-pupil spending at least about $3,000 per student. Raising that would mean that Virginia was matching the average investment of the other top 10 states for median household income.
She says Virginia has been disinvesting in public education for so long that it's going to take a long time just to catch up from the bottom of the list to anywhere near average. Michael Pope.
Well, finally, today, Labor Day is traditionally the start of the final sprint in the campaign season. Jeff Shapiro with the Richmond Times-Dispatch joins Michael to discuss the status of the campaign for governor and more.
Summer is behind us, Jeff Shapiro, and Labor Day has come and gone, which means this is the official beginning of the campaign season. Voters who had been tuned out to what was going on are now going to start tuning in. What is the state of the campaign so far? I know for the governor's campaign, we saw Youngkin sort of begin his fall campaign swing out in rural Virginia, and then, of course, McAuliffe was in Northern Virginia. So each of the main players here are starting from, you know, square one, essentially. What is the state of this campaign right now as the fall season begins?
Michael, the candidates went where the votes are, where their respective votes are. Youngkin trying to pump up that big Republican vote in the countryside. McAuliffe trying to pump up that big, big, big Democratic vote in the suburbs. As we head into the fall, and remember, early voting begins in about a week, so we're going to have essentially 45 election days starting on September 17th. McAuliffe is still hammering Youngkin on the possibility of Texas-like abortion restrictions in Virginia. Youngkin is still basically hiding out on that issue, saying really only that he is anti-abortion and that McAuliffe is an extremist on abortion rights. This is a reminder of the narrow path that Youngkin in particular faces, trying to drive up the Republican vote in the countryside and not seem so terribly threatening that he can dig into the Democratic strength in the suburbs.
So another big news event this week was the removal of the statue of Robert E. Lee from Monument Avenue in Richmond. Now, many of our listeners who might not have been to Monument Avenue recently, if they go there now, they will see a street full of empty pedestals and empty places where statues used to be, with one exception, that's the statue of Arthur Ashe. Explain the significance of finally removing the last vestige of the Confederacy from Monument Avenue.
There were a half a dozen Confederate monuments on Monument Avenue. The largest is arguably the grandest, if you will, was that of Robert E. Lee. It is owned by the state of Virginia, and there was a good deal of to-ing and fro-ing in the courts over a year between the Northern administration and defenders of the statue, or whether it should come down, and it did this week. It stood for 131 years, a symbol of white supremacy. The monuments, however, that endure are very different. They still testify to, you know, the kind of the bigoted white conservative status quo that was responsible for erecting Lee and others on Monument Avenue. And some of those monuments, they exist in state law and the way our government works. You know, for example, Virginia is the only state that prohibits its governors from serving consecutive terms. That dates back to 1851. The old oligarchs were assuming a continuum of people like themselves, and that included people who were hostile to the aspiration of blacks. Also, a freeze on annexation by cities, essentially choking them off from any growth or expansion of their tax base. This is rooted entirely in race, with the white suburbs intent on keeping the black cities at bay.
All right. Well, that's all the time we've got for this week. I'm looking forward to continuing the conversation next week. I'm Michael Pope, and we've been talking with Jeff Shapiro of the Richmond Times-Dispatch. Talk to you next week.
Roger that.
For WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicky. Thanks for listening. Stay safely connected and enjoy your Friday.